Keeler Reel 2. We were talking about your time at gunnery training at Chatham, and we're going through the positions, and you mentioned that the layer would also fire the gun.
Yes, there was a gun layer, and two men on each side of the gun, one each side of the gun. One did the training rounds, left to right, the other one lifted the barrel up and down. I can't remember what the other ones were called, quite honestly. But also, in addition, you used to learn how to fire by lanyard. In other words, stand by the gun and hook the gun and fire by lanyard in case the actual firing mechanism broke there. Something I remember quite well.
Is there anything else that that you were introduced to there? You know,
well, we didn't actually fire guns there, not at all. Not at Chatham. But we continued with our basic training.
Any signals training or anything like that? Were they sort of
if you wanted to become a signalman, but I chose to be a seaman, I didn't think my brain could absorb this signal business there.
Any more work in small boats or?
We had whalers there at Chatham, you know, where we had to learn how to climb in, climb out, oars, all the rest of it, you know, pulling away from the ship's side. Just general naval training, that was all at Chatham.
Okay, and how long were you at Chatham, about?
I'm going on now, at least a month, maybe into 2 months. And then we were given leave, home leave. How long was that? I think it might have been about a week.
And so what was your leave like?
Well, proud to be home, uniformed, you know. Mother's crying because she thought, oh my God, my son's going off into the war, you know, very upset. So I accepted it, being an expert serviceman himself. But, you know, Emily was quite happy, and also my sister was in the ATS. She was 6 years older than me, my sister, she was in the ATS. And she had leave as well at the same time, if I remember. And after leave, we went back to Chatham again, and then we were put on what we called the drafting list. And we spent, I can't remember how long in Chatham, in the barracks itself, and then every day you had to go to the drafting office to look for your name on the draft ship, and eventually I was given a draft ship to DE-78. That was Bullen's name, DE-78. We didn't know it was Bullen then, it was a draft to this ship named the DE-78.
Now, did you know what that was, or what it D stood for,
no,
or anything?
Didn't know at all what it was what it stood for. And we got together our full kit there, hammock, everything we needed, our big kit there with all our kit. And from there we were marched into Chatham Dockyard, where we were put on board a train. And we got on the train that night. We didn't know where we were going. We were given a pack lead, as far as I remember, some sort. And we got on the train that evening. And the next morning, we arrived in Gourock in Scotland. We arrived right alongside HMS, the Queen Mary, the line of Queen Mary. You probably have heard this before, on naval drafts.
Now, what? So you?
Well,
and when was this? Do you remember what month you went out in?
What the actual month was? Now, I have to look that up. And then
you were saying about June.
It was June 1943, and we went to Gourock in Scotland on this train. And when we looked up in the morning, it got daylight. And we realised we were alongside the Queen Mary in the actual dockyard. And from there we realised that we knew we were going somewhere, but we knew we were off somewhere and we didn't know where. And so we the old Queen Mary full of recruits going off to pick up ships in the States, you know.
What was it like aboard? What was your accommodation like?
like a poor Queen Mary. It wasn't easy at all.
What was your room like, or cabin?
You didn't have a gangway. There was a big hole in the side of the ship, I remember, you know, where you sort of marched off the jetty through the hole on board the ship. It's a massive thing, you can imagine, can you? And we went to different horses. It was all made up with bunk, I remember, and there was other parts which should have been made into nest balls. And we also had to do watch keeping on Georgia, by the way.
What were the watches?
Well, my watches, I was on number one Orlington gun, which was right in the bows of the Queen Mary. And I used to keep the watch on there, 4 hours on, 4 hours off, with a dealer's rating. That was a chaplain in the Army and the Navy as well. He was more than the Army uniform. But he was a trained gunner. And I used to do a watch with him. I was his loading number on the Orlington gun in the bows. And we used to have to cross from the bells that came to MS every time. But we used to go off duty, but we used to do 4 hours on, 4 hours off on this Orlington.
Had you had any training of the Orlington?
No. I'd never seen an Orlington gun until I got on board the Queen Mary, but we got familiar with it on board the Bullen.
And how about the 4 hours on that? Did you find that tough?
Well, it was a bit tough, because you didn't always get a good sleep when you went down below on the ship, there was noise going on in the mess. Also, you had to fit in your meal times as well. But vivid memories of Queen Mary. Now, one part was called Piccadilly Circus, I remember, where there were the old shops, you know, that were used to be shops when Queen Mary was Queen Mary. And they were made into different offices, you know, for different branches of the draft, you know. And that's where we used to meet sometimes and go to a mess hall or have a bit more discipline, you know, marching up and down, that sort of thing, you know. But basically, my life, 5 days on board the Queen Mary, was watchkeeping on number one Orlington. That was my life on there.
And how about seasickness? Any problems with that?
I wasn't very happy at sea. I wasn't very happy. I did have a certain number of seasickness. Not bad on the Queen Mary. That came later.
Okay, we'll come back to that. Anything else happened on the...
No, it was a very... I can't remember any entertainment. There was probably entertainment, but I don't honestly remember that. But I do remember very vividly that I got... That was my first experience of real watchkeeping, you know, on board the Queen Mary.
Now, where did you land?
Well, we came into New York. Again, we didn't know where we were, where we were going. The room was going where we were going, but when we passed the Statue of Liberty, which is at the entrance of New York Harbor, that's when we knew we were entering New York Harbor. And we were marched off the ship. She came alongside there again, and we were taken off and on board a train, which took hours going to P-78 to Boston. We went there to a barracks called the Wells Fargo Barracks, in Boston.
So you didn't stay at HMS Saker or the Asbury Park?
No, there was different ratings. Signal department, different departments. I was a seaman. I didn't do that. I went straight to Wells Fargo Barracks.
And what were your impressions of Fargo
Barracks? Fargo Barracks was a typical American Navy barracks, which was very easy. It was very easy to go, except that, again, being a big fella, I was put on the Naval Shore Patrol.
Hang on, let's look at the conditions first. I'll come out for those. So
the conditions, us as matlows from Royal Navy had never experienced before. Marvellous food. Canteen messing, you know, where you went.
Tell me about the food. What was different about the food?
Well, it was also different. I mean, it was also like the wartime food we'd experienced back in England.
In what way? What was different?
Well, we used to have chicken and good quality food and a good sweet and apple pie and a custard and ice cream and things like that, which you don't have in the Royal Navy. You have a tray, you know, you go around with a tray. So there's different portions in there. And then we used to go to our mess hall and eat our food, you know, in the barracks.
And did you prefer it? It was different, but you actually preferred it.
It was fantastic to us. It was like another world. It was like really being in another world.
And what were your rooms like? Were you sharing or...?
We were like dormitories, again in bunks, in dormitories. I can't remember how many men to a room. I really can't remember that. and they were fairly big dormitories.
Now, you were on Naval Shore Patrol.
I was on Naval Shore Patrol, so I wanted excuse and other duties because I had to do night work as well. I had to do night just as well. And when you went ashore with a Naval Patrol, you used to tie up with an SP, which was an American sailor, Shore Patrol, SP. We were in the Naval Patrol. And also the civilian policemen. And the civilian used to go around the nightclubs and the bars and that. And any troubles, I had to sort out the British outlaws, and the SP sort out the American ones, and the civilian companies to take charge of the civilian, any problems.
And what sort of problems might you encounter?
Drunken sailors.
Was there a lot of that, drunkenness?
Not a lot. We were all young, all of us young, and all experienced naval life for the first time in another country. There wasn't a lot of it now.
And what about fights? Who would they be between? British sailors and American sailors, or
very
what?
Very occasionally, English sailors and American sailors. And obviously, the American drunk as well. You know, which Sicilian cop would go in and make out as well. But that was my job. I remember vividly one night I had to go into a bar and try to arrest one of our men that came on the draft with us, who was older than us. He was a three-page AB, an elderly man, and I had to go and arrest him, you know. He couldn't get over the fact that I was coming to arrest him, but I did. I had to put the handcuffs on him and take him back to the ship, take him back to the bay. That was something I remember quite well.
Now, what else were you doing? You know, what other duties would you have other than this?
Quite honestly, I didn't have any other duties in Fargo Barracks apart from my shore patrol. I was given a job on the shore patrol, and that was. Again, it's watchkeeping, you know? You do 7 hours on, 7 hours off. If you did a night shift, you got the day off, and vice versa, you know? And I chose to do that, and I enjoyed doing that because it gave me a chance to learn about Boston. It was a great town, and you know, they're so hospitable, you know?
Now, that's what I wanted to ask you about. How did you.
Absolutely fantastic. You know, on Boston Common, there was a club called the Buddies Club, and you could go there when you were off duty and get a ticket for any show in town. If you wanted to go to visit, some people used to write in or ring in and say, could you send me a British sailor for the evening to come and have a meal and talk about England? Because there's a lot of English people in Boston, a tremendous amount, you know, and a lot of home hospitality, that's what it was all about. Used to go to the home hospitality office, and they used to see us come back here tomorrow night, 6 o'clock, we were arrange a car or taxi or somebody will pick you up and take you to their home. And some of the chaps used to go away for weekends with these people, you know. I never did. I just used to do the daily thing, you know.
And what about the tickets you were given? What could you go and see?
Any show in town, anything, any sport, anything at all. They were very, very kind people.
And what did you choose to go and see?
Baseball. I've never seen baseball.
What do you think of baseball?
I've never seen baseball. Well, it was something like rounders, really, wasn't it? Like I used to play at school, you know. Well, I used to just go to various sporting events, you know. But again, I was a bit restricted from my naval patrol because I had to be fit for that, you know. I couldn't do as much home hospitality as some of the lads did, you know.
Did you still not drink much?
Much. Nothing at all, if anything, you know. I hadn't got that experience by then.
Were you, you'd come from a fairly quiet background. Were you a bit shocked by the behaviour of some of the men when exposed to alcohol, women, things like that?
I was quite shocked.
Did it bother you?
No, it didn't bother me. It's everybody's their own choice, you know, what they want to do. And some men were a bit wild, others were not, you know.
You just didn't worry?
I didn't worry, it didn't bother me at all.
Now, were you aware of what was going on with the, you know, you were meant to be joining DE-78. When did you find out what DE stood for, what 78 meant, what you were there for?
We went to the dockyard one day, by bus if I remember right, we saw Bullen on the stocks. It hadn't been completed then. And we saw, that's when we found out it was going to be this D-78. I'll show you photographs of it in a moment, sir. On the stocks.
And what were your first impressions? I mean, because there wasn't just Bullen being built, was there?
No, there's a lot of ships there. A lot of ships have been built, yes. And we just continued till it was finished being built. We were in Targa back for 3 months waiting for Bullen to be finished. And the thing is, I remember, we eventually got on board about December. We commissioned her in December, 1943.
That's right. But what did you think of the ship as it was being built? I mean, because it did look very different from a British destroyer, didn't it?
Oh, absolutely. But I haven't seen a lot of British destroyers, all my new experience in the Navy. I didn't probably know the difference between a welded ship and a riveted ship by then, you know. But obviously the older chaps who didn't see before spoke about it probably, but I just went along with it, you know.
So this period of 3 months, you'd say we've broadly covered. There's not much more to tell about.
Not really. We were just waiting in Fargo Barracks for completion.
There was supposed to be some trouble between U.S. regular sailors and British sailors. You know, just the U.S. regulars. Were you aware of this at all? It doesn't sound like you were.
Well, again, this probably came in with the shore patrol, didn't it? You know, if there was any problems, it was probably between older American sailors. And maybe some of our older British sailors, I don't know, but it wasn't an unhappy time. I quite enjoyed it. It was a completely new life from a little boy from Kent, wasn't it? You know, I was still only 17 years of age, so I didn't become 18 until January 1944.
Now, you commissioned, according to your account, which we just got here, The Life and Death of H.M.S. Bullen, which we deposited with the department. She was commissioned in October 43. Do you remember the commissioning ceremony?
When I say December, it was October we were commissioned.
Do you remember the commissioning ceremony at all? Was there anything to it?
Apart from first in the white ensign, and it was then for the first time we met our captain and our officers. And we went to live on board Bullen, which was then in the dockyard, alongside of the dockyard. And that's where we really saw what mess we were going in, which was the signalman's mess, which is the seaman's mess, different messes, you know.
And what were which mess were you in, and what were your impressions of it?
I can't remember the number of the mess, but it was down below, obviously, one deck down. And it was a mess with bunks which fold up. You know, in the daytime you fold them up, and then you pull them down to sleep again. And you had locker underneath. It was a mess with 10 men to a mess. And that was on both sides of the ship, 10 on this side, 10 on that side. They were all basically seamen. The seamen were soakers and signals were kept separately, different messes. Right? And I was in a seamen's mess. I made a dive for a top bunk because you always try and get on a top bunk, you know, for an obvious reason.
What are they? Just for people who don't realise.
Somebody peeing on you. That's amazing. People come up drunk at night and climb up on the rope and they pee on you. It did happen. Even though I was on the top bunk.
Perhaps you'll tell that story later. But so you've got the top bunk, and
I've got the top bunk at the centre.
No. Well, where did you put your stuff?
We had a locker underneath the bunks. Each had a locker ourselves. We didn't, as we had bunks, we didn't need our hammocks, but we laid our hammock mattress on the bunk, right? And then we had green plastic covers for the bunks. So you used to lay your hammock on, you only had one blanket, and used to do this up, this green, because you used to get drips off the deck here, you know, with water, condensation. That's what you used to do with that. But during the day, you used to put your bunk up, and underneath was a locker where we used to sit, with a mess table in front of you where we used to eat our food. Now, when we first joined Bullen, we were on American messing, this canteen messing.
Tell me about that, because that's canteen. Not the normal Royal Navy.
No. We were on what they call canteen messing. Now, canteen messing is you have a petty officer on board who is in charge of the stores, and he would supply the chef with the food, and then you went up, each mess went up at meal time to get the food for the whole mess, right? And you again had these American trays where you used to eat off the American trays. And that was called canteen.
And what did you think of that?
It was a continuation, really, of being in Prado Barracks, because we had American food again, you know. Depends where you store a ship, really. Canteen messing, and which we saw a ship in America. From Boston, we sailed to North...
Hang on, just before we go on, other differences. There's supposed to be other American for things like... You actually had a laundry. Now, you wouldn't be...
Yeah, we had a laundry on board, but we weren't... Us as matlows weren't allowed to use the laundry. We had a laundryman on board. One of the sailors detailed as a laundryman, and he ran this laundry, but us as matlows weren't allowed to use the laundry. Unless you were well in living, you know, unless you were... You were bugging some of your tickler or top of rum or whatever, but I didn't draw my top, obviously, at that time, so... That didn't occur to me, but we used to do our dogging in a bucket like we've done ever since we joined the Navy, you know, very primitive.
Now, tell me more about it. How did you do it?
You had to have a bucket, obviously. If you haven't got a bucket yourself, you borrowed a bucket, and you did your dogging in a bucket. Getting it dry was another thing. You had to either hang it up in the bathroom or wherever to get it dry. And it was very difficult. Sometimes you used to hang it in the galley at night. If it was on watch at night, hang it in the galley at night to dry over the top of the cookers, you know, where the heat might have been. It was very difficult to get it over in, you know, and your shirt's smart and your collar's right, you know. And to get that right, you had to, you know, lying on board at that time, you just have to press things under your mattress, you know, sleep on them. Simple as that.
What about tickling up your uniform? You've been in the Navy a while now, I mean, well, but how did you, you know, titivate up your...
You try to change the colour of the collar, which without the dark blue running into the white, which wasn't easy to do, you know. And also with your white fronts, or you had jerseys as well for winter, but you had white fronts with a blue strip along the top again, you used to try and lighten the blue, you know, to... It's like you've been at sea a long time, you know, but I mean, I was still only a rookie anyway, so that probably didn't worry me in the early days on board, brother.
There were a couple more American things. They were supposed to have water coolers, so...
Yeah, they had a water cooler, yes, which it was one in each mess, that's true, where there was a water cooler, but if I remember right, half the time it didn't work. And ice, it was an ice cooler, made ice as well, yeah.
Now, what about welded construction? I mean, you mentioned that it wasn't something you thought about, but was it a point of comment amongst the crew?
Yes, it made it lighter. I mean, I slept on my bunk, for instance. You could hear the waves gushing by, you know, when you hit a wave. You were so near the sea, it penetrated through the deckhead, you know? Through the bulkhead.
The
noise through the bulkhead. You could hear the sea crashing by quite easily, quite simply.
Did it worry you that it was welded?
It didn't worry me, actually. I don't think so, no.
Well, were they dry ships? Was it a dry ship?
Fairly dry. And we never had rats and things like that like you did on the Navy. On other ships I was on.
We'll come to that, yeah. What about things like the through deck? You know, because that was another unusual feature in...
you used to walk from one mess to the other.
You could walk right through the ship, yes.
Right through the ship.
Did you consider that unusual? Was your lack of experience?
It was my lack of experience, yes.
Now, what was the first... Did you do any sea trials outside the harbour?
We did sea trials outside the harbour of Boston, yes. And then we went down to Norfolk, Virginia, where we again did sea trials, Norfolk, Virginia.
And what were the sea trials? Can you just describe what they were?
Twisting the engines, really, as far as I remember. And everybody had to run through their job, what they did, you know. We did a gallery exercises as well, you know.
Now, what was your job?
I was loading a number on B guns. That was my job on board. Loading them, including watchkeeping, which was a watch on the bridge, lookout on the bridge.
Well, let's look at the loading number first. That was on
B gun. There's A gun. There's three three-inch guns on board the Captain Class frigate. A gun, B gun, and C gun. I remember, or S gun. I can't remember now. The B gun I was on, which was just under the bridge, one deck down. And that was my. That was my loading number.
And how many were there in the crew?
There were four in the crew.
So there was a loader?
A loader, a gun lad, a gun trainer, and a loader, which was me, and another one as well, another set as well, just generally, you know, to be there. That's all. Four of us, in fact.
And did you practice during the sea trials off Virginia things?
Yes, we used to do shooting trials as well, yes.
And what did you think of the 3-inch gun?
I hadn't had any much experience of firing a gun, had I, you know, quite honestly. I mean, it was all new to me, but I soon got into the habit of it, you know, loading the gun, you know. I had an awful experience happen to me one night during this experience, again, this gun loading.
Before you went to Bermuda?
Before we went to Bermuda.
What was that?
I pushed the shad into the breech, and the breech jammed halfway up. Now, you're in training, you're told what's the weight of a 3-inch gun. It's not its weight in tons, it's weight, how long you wait to clear a gun, you know, before you try and take the shell out of the gun. And the weight of a 3-inch gun was half an hour, as I remember. And the gun of breech had jammed, and we had an officer on the gun with us, putting us through our paces. Two minutes, 30 tons. And we were doing this knife exercise, and I pushed the shell in, and the breech jammed halfway up. From my experience, I guess, you know, that I knew the breech had jammed, and being a big chap that I am, I tried to be clever and push the breech up, which I did. And of course the gun layer is still on the pedal, and the gun fired and recoiled and hit me on the shoulder. This has been a rather funny experience, really, because it knocked me right across the deck on against the bulkhead. And the first thing I remember, I didn't go unconscious, but the first thing I remember was this first lieutenant saying, "Another man take his place." Anyway, I was then went into the sick bay, which I had a Bradley bruise on me, but that was all. That's just a silly incident, but that was what you call the weight of a 3-inch gun, the weight of any gun. You have to wait to clear a breech. Because when you have separate, not fixed ammunition, like fixed air shells were fixed, weren't they? Some shells were separate. You know, you've got the cartridge, and also then the shell was separate. But our shells were fixed ammunition, you see. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, you were meant to wait half an hour, and you tried to do it straight away.
That was a silly thing I tried to do, but anyway, I didn't get it.
Now, this was your action station, was it?
That was my action station, yes.
And what about the thing you mentioned, the lookout duty on the bridge? What was that? Was that your other action station, or was
We sailed from Boston to north of Virginia. We used to do sea trials there as well, different trials. And we then got into watchkeeping there, and see, we had to do watchkeeping, obviously.
Now, could you explain the watchkeeping? Yeah. I think that'll help us.
Well, my watchkeeping was a lookout, obviously. And it meant 4 hours on, 4 hours off, night and day, at sea. And we used to spend our time off watch. Behind the gun, there was a kibbutz, what we called a kibbutz, a small room with watertight doors, a watertight door. And that's where we used to stay while we were off watch. From there, every hour you had to go up to change over, climb up the bulkhead, up on the bridge, to do your lookout duty.
So, what was it like in this kibbutz, as you call it?
It was dry. It was dry, and if you kept the water tight, in the Mediterranean, obviously you had the door open. At sea in the Atlantic, where the sea was coming over, you obviously had to keep the door closed. And when you used to open the door to go out, you got soaking wet before you went up the bulkhead, up to your lookout, up on the bridge. And that's why I kept my
lookout. What would you do in the off-duty period in there? What would you actually spend your time?
Sit, talk, read, whatever, you know.
You couldn't sleep?
Not to go deep to sleep. You tried to, obviously. Depends what time of the day it was.
Would you sometimes choose to go down to your mess deck?
No, you couldn't. I never did. I always stayed in my kibbutz, did my 4 hours on, 4 hours off, as I said, then back to your mess, 4 hours off, and it was an hour up on the bridge and an hour down in the kibbutz, you know, 4 hours.
That was when you were on duty?
When we were on duty, yeah.
And what was the lookout duty?
I also used to do a masthead lookout.